to the Department of Transportation, so that way they're not sitting here for two full hours. So why don't we begin?
Okay. I'm Bob Hidley. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Aviation. And with me today I have Jennifer Keller, our fiscal manager. And back behind us, we don't have enough chairs, is Callie Reardon. He's our state manager of all of our state airports. And
Christina Shearer, Department of Administrative Services.
Howdy. Welcome.
Okay.
Well, how do you want to proceed with your budget? Do you want to take us through the notebook? Is that?
I'd like to start with that, and then a couple of proposals at the end, we have some additional material that we handed out that we wanted to go through for those.
Okay, perfect. We'll follow your lead then.
Okay. So you have in front of you our proposed budget for the years 2005 through 2007, and I don't know how much detail you want me to go through because I don't want to read to you what's here.
No, I went into that. What I would suggest is we have 2 hours. You take the appropriate amount of time you need to go through your budget, knowing that we're going to want to look at the priorities and look at the way your budget is broken out.
All right. Okay. Our department is responsible for planning and development of the safe and efficient aviation system in Oregon. And second page has our mission, just that we're trying to help the well-being of the people in Oregon by advancing aviation in the state. And it lists there all the different things that we do to plan and administer grants. We have 28 state airports that actually state owns that we manage also. We're going to be talking about, on page 3, the different programs that we have that you can see there. And we have performance measures that we use to see how good a job we're doing. And our first goal is to keep the airports in a safe and good operating condition. So we measure that by the percentage of our runways that are in good or better condition. And we do that through FAA grants for maintenance to repair and do maintenance on airports. And we're hoping for a target 98% of runways in good or better condition by the end of year 2007. And along with that, we try to have our runways in the right length and width to meet the FAA standards for that type of airport. And we need to have appropriate lighting and navigation aids at those airports also, so we need to increase the percentage of our airports that meet those requirements. That's goal number one. Number two, it's very important to us to educate the public in Oregon about different facets of aviation and also get their comments so that we can have an airport system that meets their needs. So goal number two is our job to go out and contact people in the public and also get their input. Three, we want to have excellent customer service, and that kind of goes along with goal number two also, that we're trying to find out through surveys what customer satisfaction, what level we have in the work that we do in the Department of Aviation.
Really quick, share with the committee, why does the state own 28 airports rather than having local communities or ports or even counties own the airports?
Well, actually, we used to own 31, and three of them have been given back to the local communities because they desired to take over the operation of them. The history of each individual airport, why we have ownership, I'm not sure, but a lot of them, they're airports located in rural areas that there are no airplanes based there. It's a landing strip with nothing there. And so there's really no local agency that really has the resources to take care of that airport. And there are other ones that, Aurora, for example, is the third busiest airport in the state. And do you have the history? I don't know the reason why we own that. Maybe you do, Charlie.
In all fairness,
I've only been here a month and a half.
Exactly.
So why we own Aurora, I don't know. Some airports were given to the state after World War II, and they were excess military runways when the war was over, that kind of thing.
Okay.
But for Aurora, for example, you know, Charlie, that's quite a good example.
Yeah, come on up. Feel free to come on up and just introduce yourself for the record.
My name's Charlie Reardon, State Air Force Manager. Like you
here,
said, we
bring
have...
Bring a chair up, bring a chair up.
I don't know if they don't move these chairs.
Oh, they don't move.
Yeah, we really need another chair here.
The Aurora Airport, Mr. Chairman, the Aurora Airport, you know, in the past, it has been not the airport that it is today. In the past, we have taken over these airports because they were landing strips, like he alluded to, either the military surplus them or a lot of our landing strips in the state are have been created as staging areas to help put out forest fires. You know, we have a lot of those airports that are in the eastern part of the state that are staging areas for, you know, fire suppression. Secondly, you know, airports are an important economic part of our state infrastructure system for transportation. Excuse me. You know, it's important that we have a state airport system that is encompasses the state for, you know, emergency landing. If some aircraft lose their engines, there's a place they can land, or there's an emergency. Also, medical evacuation. So if a local community doesn't have the financial resources to support that, you know, it's important for the state that we have those pieces of transportation as an infrastructure system.
Why don't we do this? If you would, just for the committee, try and go get some of the historical data and just get it, bring it to us. Yeah. Now, really quick, we do have a quorum here, and we also have a special guest.
We have a very distinguished new member of the committee, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce Chris Hostetter from Bend, Oregon. He's over visiting today. He will absolutely add to the discussion, IQ level, and quality of the debate that we are having here today.
I see that. And we must have moms in the audience. Come on up. You got to come get a good picture really quick. Come on. I have. What grade are you in, Chris?
A second.
I have a second grader as well. We definitely need a good picture here.
That's right.
Oh.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Anytime.
Okay, buddy. Good job. Thanks for joining us.
Sorry to interrupt.
Not at all. We appreciate the rise in our IQ. So. Bye-bye, Chris. So. Except for LFO staff and the good Senate and the good representative.
That's great, Mr. Chairman. This child will never forget that. He'll always remember this.
What I'm going to interrupt our process really quick because we do have a quorum, and I'm going to ask if the Department of Transportation could come up so we could... what's that? We're in public hearing on it.
No, you're
right. We're going to convene a work session here. Right. So what we're going to do is we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5005. We're going to open up a public hearing on the Oregon Department of Transportation's request to apply for a federal grant. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to interrupt the process. If that works for your flow, we're happy to come in at this point. I'm Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. We're here to do an e-board-like action where we come and seek approval to apply for a federal fund grant. This one relates to two grants. The first one is for office or the on-the-job training and supportive services functions, which are functions that we currently do in order to expand the mentoring and orientation and assistance to firms to be job ready and to employees to be job ready in the construction trades. What we're doing, though, is a pretty significant increase from what we've done in the past. This last year, we had a $200,000 grant. We're asking for an $800,000 grant from the federal government. This is new funds which are available and allow us to expand the program significantly, which is good timing considering the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, which allows us to, as we move into the clear increase in the number of construction projects, to make sure that we've got a work plan to address bringing new employees and new laborers into the workplace to do these projects. So this allows us to get the federal funds, if they're approved, to move ahead and have a work plan that's aggressive and meets the needs of the budget note that came from the legislature last session. The second component is a second grant, which is for innovative projects, and it is for similar types of work. In other words, we'd be creating systems and better monitoring for better contractor compliance, as well as creating efficient information and an infrastructure for a skilled labor pool. So it allows us to be aggressive in both putting targets in for contractors to increase the amount of apprentices and people who are trained in the workforce to replace those aging white guys like myself who are retiring from the workforce, and we're trying to get more people of color and more women into the construction trades, and allows us to train those people so they can come into the spots which are need to be opening up or will be opening up due to those retirements. So, Mr. Chair, it's two separate grants. The total is $1.6 million. Allows us to meet the needs of the budget note that came from the 03 session relating to diversity in the workplace, and we ask for your approval of the request.
Any questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to share public testimony? With that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open up a work session on the grant request before us. And
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I am very happy to see the department looking out for opportunities for grants of this nature. And so in addition to having complimented you on your work for the direction in which you're going, in which you're working with communities all across the state, I want to give you kudos on making this application. Here's, with that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared once LFO had made their recommendation to you to give your motion.
Terrific. Why don't we move to LFO for their recommendation?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Legislative Fiscal recommends approving the request to apply for this grant.
Mr. Chairman, I move the request for the grant for approval for the Department of Transportation to apply for this grant that is before us at this point. To the full Ways and Means Committee.
Sure. Do we have any comments, any questions? Seeing no objection?
She meant with a do pass, too, Ms.
Oh, God.
With a do pass recommendation.
He's been on the audit. Is that right, Representative Smith? He's been on the audit, right?
Okay. I'm with you. Seeing no objection. It's so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Thank you very much. Yeah. We're now going to reopen up the public hearing on House Bill 5005, Department of Aviation. And we truly appreciate you working with us on that minor inconvenience. So why don't we proceed forward? We had interrupted you on the rationale between we're on the performance measures, and we were discussing the rationale of why state-owned airports versus county, cities, local government. And I think we'll move from that point.
Okay, so we will provide the committee with a list of each airport and why we own it today.
Perfect.
And while we're talking about that, our board's policy is to, whenever possible, to give the local jurisdiction back those airports whenever it's feasible. And the last couple of years, I believe that's happened to three of them, the last short period of time. So that is our goal, to let the communities have their own airports when it makes sense.
We have a question from Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, has there ever been a time that, because of development of airports in the vicinity or other reasons, that an airport that was owned by the state was closed out, was no longer needed? Or is it that once you've got it, you always have it unless somebody else is willing to take it over?
I don't know of any that have been closed. Do you?
Mr. Chair and Representative Richardson, with the development of airports, it's very challenging to build a new airport these days anywhere. Even if we have an airport in a community that is at capacity, landlocked, or constrained, and we try to relocate it to another location, it is extremely challenging from an environmental perspective and a financial perspective to build a new airport. So the aviation department and the aviation community is very reluctant to let any of those facilities close. So I am not aware of any airport being shut down, any publicly owned airport being shut down for use of another nature, unless, you know, it has been relocated and a new one reconstructed somewhere else to replace it. So in my history here and the stuff that I've read, I'm not aware of any Oregon state-owned airport just simply closing.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we pretty much finished up with performance measures before we stopped. So really we're up to page 9, which is our organization chart. Currently the Department of Aviation has a total of 16 positions for 16 employees that are all listed here. We currently have 3 vacancies and we're in the middle of filling those positions. I'd like to move on to programs and services. Under programs, we have administration division, and as you can see, that's finance, public relations, coordination with the legislature. We do require in our state that both pilots and aircraft be registered, and we receive some of our income from that. We have office administration, clerical support. Aviation programs division, that's the part of our division where we solicit, as best we can, grants from the federal government for airport planning and development, land use planning, safety programs. And the state-owned airports division, we just talked about the 28 airports that we own. For environmental factors, our culture really is changing quite a bit with retirements that we've had, a large turnover of personnel, a lot of challenges that we have in aviation. State Aviation Board is appointed by the governor, and they set the policy for us. Generally, aviation industry is changing quite a bit. As time goes on, we're seeing really a change in the way that aircraft are being used. One thing I think is going to be very important in the future, today corporate jets are very expensive, and the next few years you're going to see a new generation of corporate jets that cost roughly about $1 million a piece instead of $10-20 million like today. And that's going to open up many smaller companies into having their own jet service that they don't today. And that's really significant because that will open up a lot of smaller airports to having corporate jets fly in that don't today. And we need to be ready for that. Security, of course, is more important today than it used to be. And a large problem that we face also is that the infrastructure of our airports is getting older, and as it gets older, it requires more funding for maintenance. Our state-owned airports and maintaining our property, just mentioned we have 28 airports, and also our department is located in a building at the Salem Airport that is fairly old, and sometime in the near future, it needs to be either renovated or replaced. So on page 12, we have our business plan.
We have a question for Representative Richardson.
Now, you said that we have completed the review of performance measures and we've moved on. Is that right?
Yes, unless you have questions.
May I ask a question? I'm looking at the 5 performance measures, 4 that are presently in position, and we haven't really reviewed them. And as I'm looking at them, I'm wondering if these performance measures do anything toward meeting the purpose, which is the Oregon Department of Aviation is responsible for planning and development of a safe and efficient aviation system in Oregon. And then the performance measures talk about percent of runways in good or better condition, percent of runways meeting the length and width standards, percent of airports meeting lighting and navigational aid standards, number of people contacted through meetings and website, all of which to me may be internal measurements, but I don't see how they reflect on the goal of meeting planning and development of a safe and efficient aviation system for Oregon.
Well, the condition and length of a runway is probably primarily one of the most important safety factors in aviation, is that we have safe airports that are sufficient for the kind of airplanes that are using them.
Please follow up.
So is the Oregon Department of Aviation expanding the length of runways and making them wider? I mean, are those projects that you're funding then?
At some airports, yes. We are trying to improve the airports that we own to have them meet the criteria of the aircraft that use them, as well as just maintain them.
Follow up. So in the funding that we're going to be looking at here, do you have requests for money to expand runways on some of the state-owned airports and widening them?
Well, for example, one of our major projects coming up is to resurface the Aurora Airport. And that pavement, if this work isn't done within the next year or two, our engineers tell us that the pavement will be in a condition the aircraft won't be able to safely use that runway surface if we don't do the construction work to resurface it. I guess that's the kind of thing we're talking about there, to keep the runways in good condition. We go around and we inspect each airport every 3 years in the state for the runway condition. So we rotate that to try to do areas to have economy of scale to do different areas at the same time. And as we find problems with the runways, then we have to put together the plans to repair that or to maintain that runway surface.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I really haven't spent a lot of time on their performance measures, but I'm wondering if these performance measures are such that they really are responsive to this committee in making budgeting decisions. I mean, especially the number of people visiting a website or being taught. I mean, that may be an internal goal, but it really doesn't talk about the quality of the meetings or any results that make a difference. And as far as the others,
you want to speak about that now?
Let me take some.
I'm just bringing it up for our committee to consider whether or not these are useful performance.
We are going to add some performance measures, and we were going to talk about some suggestions for additional ones later, but maybe now is a good time to do that.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I think these first three performance measures in particular would probably be more appropriately classified as intermediate outcomes measures. This is not an area that the agency has devoted a tremendous amount of time on, given that there are turnover and change in mission and culture. And I would recommend that beyond the performance measures that they're proposing to add and the standard statewide performance measures that DAS is asking to have added to all agency budgets, that they work with the Progress Board in the interim to develop perhaps measures that more appropriately get at the issues that this committee feels are important for this agency.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
I don't know of any other state agency that has the kind of turnover and change that the Department of Aviation has had. And after sitting on this committee for the last 20 years, I should say to you that we've come a long way, baby. I mean, and I don't mean that flirtatiously, but in terms of where they were and how they are organized to date, I regret that Senator Betsy Johnson is out on another committee assignment, because she could historically give you some data on this. But we haven't funded them quite well. We've just gotten so in the last 8 years that we've really funded this agency. So they've really come a long ways. And I should tell you, I was looking at a program about 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about the number of people who are now buying airplanes. And just about, it's the most popular thing in Hollywood that you want to see. And a lot of the airports, like in our state, if they're not ready to accommodate a lot of the airplanes, we're going to be in bad shape, because the Hollywood group is buying airplanes like other people are buying cars, you know. And so it would appear to me that they should be measuring the condition of the
I'm trying to say the runway. Of the runway. But in addition, I hear what you're saying, that maybe the performance measures should be a little more inclusive in terms of telling us the outcomes of those studies and how many runways are in good shape, how many in bad shape, what do we need? Having some goals for them. I don't see the goals that you were talking about, goals and outcomes. And I think that's where the difference would possibly come in. And with them being able to work with DAS, I think that that's a good commitment. And maybe, Mr. Chairman, having that to be a part of the direction to our analysts, and believe you me, Susan Jordan gets it, and it would be something that she and DAS could work with together on tightening up this performance measure.
I agree. I think it would be fun. Thank you. Do you have, committee members, do you have any feeling as to, and one of the things that we're to do is come back with recommendations on status of current performance measures. Do you think that we ought to recommend that they continue measuring and giving to us a performance measure which tells how many people they've contacted in public meetings on a website? I mean, is that useful? Or is that an internal measurement that they would use?
From my own perspective, Mr. Chairman, I think how many people use their websites and that kind of stuff is not a measurement of their success or failure. It would appear to me what is a measurement of their success or failure is how accommodating our airstrips are to airplanes that are trying to come in here, because that's the revenue piece.
Right.
And as long as it's measuring revenue, I think that would be the outcome that we'd like to see have happen, and not how many times it had been used, because I imagine that they would probably get more personal phone calls than they possibly would things on their website. But I do think it's that we should be measuring the use, mm-hmm. You know, how many airplanes came in per year, the condition of the runway, and that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to remind the committee that all agency budgets are performance measures are being added to all agencies for customer service. There are the two that would address some of what you're asking about. And I had discussed this with the department. They may or may not continue this measure on the number of people contacted after going through the survey one. And I am also recommending that there be two measures added on the number of days between receipt of grant application and award and the number of days between receipt of invoice and grant reimbursement requests at the request of the co-chair.
Okay, sounds good. Could we interrupt the flow and come back to you, Mr.
Yes.
Hidley, and have you tell us, what do you see your job is? What is the goal of your agency, and where do you plan on being 2 years that is in a better position than where we are today in your department?
Okay. I really think that there are three major problems, areas that I need to work on. One of those is air service for the state, that we need to keep the air service we have. And in some cases, if we don't do something, that it may become worse than it is now. And there are some areas of the state where we need to increase the air service that we have. And along with that, we need to work for economic development as much as we can to bring new business into the state, and aviation is a big part of that. A community is not going to grow if they don't have air service for bring customers and employees in, as well as air freight. And so we need to work on that. And the infrastructure of all the airports needs to be such that they can handle whatever level of airline service or freight service or whatever aviation level of service that community needs. So those are really the three areas that I intend to focus on.
Okay, and as a department head, what are the plans? What is your involvement in trying to generate greater air service for the state of Oregon? I mean, we're talking about connection with more lines with China, or I mean, are we talking about doing something with Medford Jackson County International Airport to make it really an international airport? What do you?
Well, some of that you'll see later in one of our proposals, but. The problem we have right now is that we all have bits and pieces of what this problem is. Airports have master plans for their development. There are some older studies that were done concerning air service and a statewide system plan, but nowhere is there one document. I guess you call it a master plan of what the problems are and how we're going to to solve that. So the next few months, and we already are starting with the Airport Managers Association of both Oregon and Washington and the Washington DOT and ourselves to try to get a grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation to do a study that I'm talking about to find out where the deficiencies in air service are and what we can do to improve it. But we need to go further than that. We need to put all these different studies together into one plan so that I know what I'm talking about. Because right now, I don't know which communities need better air service or which communities don't have any at all, need service that doesn't exist today. I don't know which airports need to be expanded for the smaller jet aircraft I talked about in the future, that kind of thing. So we need to put together a plan for that, and that's my first really important goal, is to put that plan together over the next few months. I guess you call it a statewide master plan for aviation.
Okay. Senator Johnson, was asking what he sees as the purpose of the department and what their plans are, and he said there's three: air service enhancement for the state of Oregon, economic development and involvement of aviation and economic development, and infrastructure improvement and assuring that we have proper infrastructure in our airports, and that there's presently no master plan. And so one thing that Mr. Higley sees as his first order of business is to develop a master plan for the state.
I might just, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, and I apologize, I was testifying on a bill, and I'm going to have to go and have a little visitation with Legislative Fiscal in just a second. A little historical perspective might be useful, and that is I served as the aeronautics administrator when Aero was part of ODOT. And when I resigned from that position, then I helped advocate the creation of the Department of Aviation in the 99 session. Since the department became a freestanding agency, the FAA has seen fit to allow the department to be the FAA sort of on-the-ground representative in Oregon, passing through a great deal of money to the department and looking to the department to exercise leadership on aviation policy in the state. I obviously, because I was so integrally involved in the creation of the agency, have watched the agency very carefully, and it is my observation that they continue to perform at a very high level, albeit they had a bit of a setback with the loss of a manager, operating with an interim manager, and now Mr. Hedley's been on the job a grand total of about a month, right?
Yes.
I was involved in his selection process, which was a very open, comprehensive citizens selection process, making a recommendation to the governor that the governor saw fit to follow through on with Mr. Hedley's appointment. I see great things coming from the agency. I would anticipate that there'll be a period of time while Mr. Hedley learns the state, learns the issues. He certainly comes with a rich aviation background, but I think once he gets out and has an opportunity to speak with folks on the ground, that it will be this agency that provides the leadership to help us once again look at the questions of regional air service and look at the questions of how do we use airports as key economic drivers in the communities where they're located. And I anticipate working as helpfully as I can with the agency as they begin the undertaking on this important work. I feel very positive about the agency, and I'm excited about Mr. Hedley's leadership, what he'll bring to it. Mr. Reardon filled in very capably during the period of time that the agency did not have a manager, and I'm looking to the agency to do great and wonderful things at this point.
Before you came in, we also were looking at performance measurement data, and the performance measurements do not relate to air service in the state or economic development. Three of them do have to do with maintaining infrastructure on airports or on landing strips. And then basically there was a feel among committee members that the one that counts the number of people that are contacted by the internet or public presentations really is an internal issue, and it's not something a performance measurement for us.
I would share those observations, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me to respond, and I think it's part of this interplay between agency and panel that help define those measurements whereby we can, as policymakers, best measure the performance of the agency. And I would anticipate from the conversations that I've had with Mr. Reardon and Mr. Hedley that they would be quite receptive to having guidance from the panel, so that next session, when they're before us, that they will clearly be able, against objective standards, to demonstrate their success. I know that particularly in Eastern Oregon, there are a number of people that are very eager to see an air service, a community air service model move forward. I would add only parenthetically that my father was a former legislator, was one of the people who helped start Air Oregon. And at the time of airline deregulation, there was evidence that there was pent-up demand for ridership in some of those Eastern Oregon communities. And I think that under Mr. Hidley's leadership that there will be an opportunity to revisit that demand for regular, predictable, long-lasting air service in our communities. But we have to do some infrastructure planning to get there. There's no point in having a business jet, for example, be able to land at an airport in the middle of the night, and you know this as well as anybody, and discover there's no fuel, no car, no phone, no way to get into town, and so you've flown into town in a multi-million dollar aircraft and you're out on the road waiting for the largesse of strangers to get you in to get a burger. So we have a lot of planning that needs to be done, and I'm confident the agency will be able to discharge that mission, and I'm sure they'd be receptive to whatever performance measure guidance we could provide.
There's been they've already indicated there will be meetings between them and DAS and others to discuss outcome-based performance measures. And I would just ask that they not focus solely on infrastructure improvement maintenance, but that if the other areas that you're concerned about are air service for Oregon, that there be outcome measurements relating to that, and if it's economic development, that there be some performance measurement relating to that, so that it helps direct the effort and the energy in those three areas, not just one, as far as the performance measurements are concerned.
I would join in that observation, Mr. Chair.
Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be better answered by... or at least Senator Johnson might like to give her thoughts on this right quick before she leaves.
But she'll wait.
All right, thank you. And then I would appreciate it if you would respond also. I wonder if in the plan there's any thought of visiting this all the airports and of these 31 some that have just a grass strip and that we really need to spend our money where it's going to create jobs, help the community, and where there's some possibility of having something in the future. And yet we have this obligation because people in a community that have a grass airstrip say, well, the state owns it and they need to come down here and cut the grass and build us a new hangar and all those kind of things. So
Mr. Chair, by your leave, I may have a historical perspective that the agency doesn't have because this is a debate that we had for the 5 years I ran the agency. Oregon has had a long and rich tradition of having airports. We have in excess of 400 airports, and they go all the way from the very busy and complex international PDX through to little grass strips like Beaver Marsh and Alkali Lake. There is, I believe, if properly developed, an economic potential in Alkali Lake and Beaver Marsh because there are many aviation enthusiasts who welcome a chance to do what's generally referred to as backcountry airporting. The state does not make much of an expenditure in those airports. During the 5 years that I was responsible for making sure that Alkali Lake and Beaver Marsh were safe, we would do basically flyover inspections. There's virtually no infrastructure. Some of them don't have grass to cut. Alkali Lake would be lucky if it saw a blade of grass. And so there is not any particular expense done during the expended. During the time that I was at the agency, we made a particular effort to see if some of those remote and rugged airports could be adopted by the groups that used them. For example, chapters of the Oregon Pilots Association. And at no cost to the state, they were responsible for performing inspections on behalf of the state, making sure that somebody at least looked to see that the minimum safety requirements for a rugged and remote airport were there. And that program worked quite well. I think it could probably stand a little tending right now to make sure that the pilot community is re-engaged. Many will argue that the very existence of those airports is absolutely essential to safety. We have in the mountains, for example, very changeable weather that changes quickly. And to have the presence of Santee Am Airport there coming over the mountains, if a pilot runs into a dangerous situation, they have that as an escape valve. But in my experience, very little money was expended on those airports. I wouldn't see that that changes in any practical way, and I would look to the agency to make the largest investment in those airports with the highest dividends and the highest possible return on the investment.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Johnson. I guess what I'm saying is, in the evaluation of all of them, are there any that you feel can be expendable, in other words.
Absolutely. I have, Mr. Chairman, in the time that I was responsible for watching those airports, we looked at a number of them, Pacific City, for example, and I know that people listening on the Internet to this, well, they'll just flinch if I say Pacific City, and I can see Mr. Reardon smiling because he knows what I'm going to say, and he knows the conundrum that this places the agency in. Pacific City is an airport with a number of deficiencies. It sits on land right next to the ocean. Extremely desirable property. That property, however, faces some land use challenges. But let's assume that the agency could undertake the deliberations to say, is this rather challenging from a safety perspective airport worth the risk benefit of A, keeping open, or B, converting to another use if they went through the land use process? Pacific City is underwater half the year. I'm sure it poses particular risk potential for the state to have it in our portfolio of airports. Yet it is a much beloved airport by the people that use it and have been practiced in coming in and out of an airport with limitations. Based on the interview questions that we visited with Mr. Hidley about, I was on the interview panel. I have every expectation that he will engage the professional staff at Aeronautics to evaluate those airports and to make a report to the legislature about what in the state's portfolio of now 30 airports?
28.
28. So we had been divesting airports over time. There were 32 when I was there. That it might be reasonable to divest some of these airports, but a public process will have to be undertaken because there are people who hold those airports in great value, and I wouldn't want to shut them out of a process to decide that the state shouldn't have those airports in their portfolio any longer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, so there's a couple of points that came from what you've said, and that is that, one, you're being asked to go ahead and evaluate each of the airports and their desirability and whether or not it's your recommendation that there be any consideration toward divesting the state of them, which is a question that's fraught with political consequences, but nevertheless periodically ought to be looked at because we, you know, everything costs money. Also, we'd like to have a list by airport of how much is expended from your budget to maintain them, because if it's de minimis, then, you know, there are, it's not an issue. If it's extreme and the utilization is very low, then it ought to be looked at. So that would be helpful for us as well.
One thing we started, I'm new here, and this is something that I implement, and I think it's important. We now have what we call a management control program, mm-hmm. and this is on our website if you'd like to take a look at it. And what we've done for our board and for we sent a copy to DAS, the governor's office, anybody that's interested. We're trying to put together, right now I think there's about 80 slides in here that all talk about different parts of what we've been talking about today. And, for example, here's slides in state airport deficiencies. And they're all listed out of if the pavement isn't up to speed, it doesn't have a fence, obstructions, lighting. This is what we're trying to use to educate our airport board and everybody else who's interested in what the good and bad points of our airports are and all the different facets of state aviation. I encourage you to take a look at this. A lot of your questions might be answered. And also, any slide that you'd like us to add, we'll be happy to do that. Any area that you'd like us to have in here, we're updating this every 2 months for every board meeting. So any area that you have interest in, we'd like to include those slides so that we're communicating and giving everybody the information that they need for the decisions we have to make. So that's the intent of this program.
We have that. All right. Questions?
No, I didn't give it to you in the packet. I didn't know that it was, but it is on our website, or we can give you a copy if you'd like it later.
Okay.
But a lot of your questions will be answered if you take a look at it, I think.
Okay.
And we welcome your input if you'd like us to put something else in here that's not currently in the plan.
Thank you.
Okay. So where are we now? I guess we're starting our agency business plan. Is that way up to that?
Yes.
On page 12?
Yes.
Okay. Number one, we're trying to develop a strategic plan to describe the state's role in airport ownership, and we just mentioned that briefly. One of our goals is to develop airport layout plans by 2007 for all of our airports, and that's kind of a plan of how we develop the airport in the future. We have six, that'd be a performance measure. We have six remaining that we haven't done that with yet. So our goal is to have all of these done by 2007, so we have a plan of what to do with the airport in the future.
Would you mind going into a little more detail? What do you mean by that? I mean, layout plans, not the layout, because FAA has all of that.
Well, maybe a better word would be airport master plan.
Okay.
For the airports that we have, what plan do we have for that airport in the future for not only maintain runways or lengthening them, but areas set aside for hangar development or different kinds of development for the airport? You need to have a plan. If somebody comes to us and says, hey, I want to build a hangar on your airport, we have to say, well, here's the space that's available. So we need to have a plan like that for every airport. And right now we have six that we need to do that with yet. We need to develop a framework for state-owned airport subsidies. A lot of these airports, as Senator Johnson mentioned, there's nobody there. They're just a strip of land to land somewhere out in Oregon. So how much does it cost us to maintain that airport? So what you asked, that's something we need to do. We need to find out if it's economically feasible to keep all these airports open. So that's what this one is. How much does it cost to keep an airport open? And it's different depending on what we have. For example, we went to Cape Blanco this week. The county would like to get an easement to use. They have some land adjacent to the airport. It's landlocked right now. They don't have access to their land unless they get an easement across the state-owned airport property. And I inherited this problem where they wanted to build a $1.6 million road to go entirely around the runway to get to their property. And I said, why do you want to do that when you go on the other end of the runway for maybe $200,000 and put the same road in to get access to your land? So we just went out and took a look at that. And so we're having a meeting with them in the governor's office on Tuesday, and I think we're going to save them about $1.5 million with the proposal that we have, which will give them more land for economic development. But maybe that's a good example. That airport was originally a Navy base in World War II. It has a very large runway, 5,000 feet by 200 feet of pavement. What do they get, about 900 operations a year right now? I believe there's two or three airplanes based there, and less than 1,000 operations a year on a runway that eventually will be very expensive to maintain. Large jet aircraft could land there. And I can see a potential in the future as tourism or business develops in the area. That could become a very important asset to that community. So we're trying to encourage them to take over ownership of that airport, and they're considering that to do what we're talking about.
What community is that?
What's the local town? Cape Blanco is the airport.
Mr. Chair, the community is at Cape Blanco. However, the county, Curry County, is interested in taking over the airport.
Thank you.
Right now, all there is, there's just cranberry bogs around the airport. That's it. But I could see the potential for a lot of growth and development there in the future as more people move into the area. It's right next to the ocean. It's a great location. It'd be very expensive to replace that airport today, if it even be possible. So we're encouraging them to take over ownership of that airport. Okay. Item number two. Part of our charter is to promote aviation education for people in the state of Oregon. So we're doing that today. We need to facilitate development of, as best we can, foster aviation education and development. Kindergarten through 12 we have here, but also through higher education also, and we'll talk about that a little later, another idea that we have for that. And we're trying to work with other agencies to help encourage educational opportunities. We just had a meeting with the FAA, for example, a couple weeks ago with their education people to help foster aviation education in the state. And along those lines, this was last year, we had an aviation art contest, which actually was pretty successful to get different students in the state to submit aviation art. We had a panel that judged what was submitted, and we recently gave out savings bond awards for the winners that had the best art in the state. And the FAA was so impressed with that, that will be in one of their upcoming national newsletters. They like that idea. Number three, we're trying to seek out opportunities to promote economic development in Oregon, and I touched on that a minute ago, but that's really critical, that we do all we can to encourage economic development in the state. There's many different ways that we can do that. And I've done that in my past, too, managing airports. But we need to do all we can to bring new business in the state, to keep what we have. Some of those ways are to the master plan study that I talked to you about, to find out where we can get the most bang for our buck, or do the best we can to develop particular airports that would offer the most for future development. I'm very concerned that we don't lose any airline service that's necessary in our state. So we need to do all we can to promote and to keep the airline service we can, and maybe bring more air service into the state as the markets justify it. So that's all part of number three here. Number four, we're all aware that security on the airports has become more critical, and we're working with all different groups to do all we can to keep our airport secure. We met with the TSA officials at an airport manager's meeting about 2 weeks ago, and we offered a couple more ideas to help with them, with their idea of keeping our airport safe. So we're doing that in item number four. We do have weekly teleconferences with the state airport managers, and we do discuss security on a weekly basis with them. Okay. I wasn't here when the agency was reorganized, but as Senator Johnson mentioned, in 1999, our organization moved out of the Department of Transportation and became its own independent agency. And along with that, the governor appointed a seven-member board to set policy for us. For cost control, we try to take as many steps as we can to control costs. And part of that is our managing control program, which has financial data in here also. We're trying the best we can to make the best use of every dollar that we have. And the second item here is very important to me personally, that we work as hard as we can to get every dollar of federal grant money that we can possibly make available to Oregon airports. And that's really important. In a lot of cases, $1 matching funds brings in $19 of additional federal funds. Some projects are less than that, depends on the project. But the best ones, which is usually pavement projects, for every dollar matching funds, we're going to bring in $19 of federal funds. So I want to do everything we can to maximize that, to bring as much money into the state that we can. We also work as hard as we can to limit travel to out-of-state conventions or meetings unless we feel it's essential for our development or to get additional information we need to develop aviation in the state. Okay, on page 14, this talks about our administrative costs. And Jennifer, you can help me a little bit with this as we go through it. Our projected administration costs for the next biennium is $732,000, which is 4% of the governor's budget for this portion. And kind of give a historical idea of what happened when we were part of ODOT. It was 4% of the budget during that time also. And can you explain why it increased a little bit?
Why it increased?
Yeah, it's a little more than it was.
Well, Representative Richardson, it's decreased. Originally, when we were initially set apart from ODOT, the administrative portion was actually about 10% of that budget. And since then, it's declined to about 4% and has stayed about that constant percentage of the governor's recommended budget since that period.
Okay, will you be getting to the General Aviation Entitlement Program as part of your remarks?
Yes. That's a later page. Okay. On information technology, we do have a server out in our building that we use to have our website be available to everybody. And this pretty much talks about that. We do have a database for pilots and aircraft that are registered in the state, and we do, I think I mentioned that earlier, that's part of our income is through registration fees for aircraft based in the state and pilots who live here. We do, this is called AIMS. It's a new computer system that we're using now to manage our leases. We have, is it roughly 300? I'm not sure the number. We have over 300 leases for different pieces of property at our state-owned airports that we have to manage and make sure that the leases are updated and that the owners are in compliance. So we have a software program that monitors that for us.
Are you involved in licensing of aircraft at all?
We do have them register with us, but we don't license and inspect the aircraft. That's done by the FAA.
Registering aircraft in Oregon, that goes through your department?
Yes, it does.
Is there a number of large commercial aircraft that get registered in Oregon, like for Boeing, shortly after being manufactured, that then are flying internationally?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, are we being used as a way to avoid sales tax with large commercial aircraft?
Mr. Chair, may I ask?
Go ahead.
To my knowledge, we have had some corporations that I personally witnessed come into our office and want to base their aircraft at the Portland International Airport for cargo activity. I think it's, the last one that came in that I learned about was a 747. There was a corporation out of London who wanted to start up a cargo operation at PDX. If they registered it in our state, they would actually, pay our pilot or the aircraft registration. I am aware of that. However, I know if it's a major airline, they would register their aircraft in the state that they are incorporated. Like I know American Airlines registers all of their aircraft in Texas because that's their headquarters. And we don't have any major airline based here in Oregon, so they wouldn't register their aircraft as an Oregon airline. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, you do. You know how there's a problem with people buying RVs in California but registering them in Oregon because of the high costs of registering them in California. And I'm wondering if that's also an issue with large, expensive aircraft.
Mr. Chair, one trend that I have seen is not so much for the airlines like Boeing's, or the corporate jets, the people out of California will base their aircraft in Oregon, and our people out of Washington will base their aircraft in Oregon, and their pilots live here, and the aircraft, stays in the hangar in Oregon. But when the corporate leaders want to go somewhere, the guy will spool up out of, Medford and fly to California, pick up their boss, and take him to wherever he wants to go in the world. So we do have a lot of that type of based aircraft in the state of Oregon, which is an inverse of what you're asking. Are people not basing the aircraft here? We tend to see, from a business perspective of corporate aircraft, people from other states basing their aircraft here because it is less expensive in the state of Oregon than California.
That's what I was referring to, is that they would do it here.
Yes, sir.
Is there a consequence to an aircraft owner who fails to register in Oregon that for an aircraft that's based in Oregon?
We just updated the bill that does have penalties. Actually, is it criminal penalties, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, may I touch that? What happened is there was a bill that, I'm not good with the language, but it was floated, I'll say. And we brought it up in the past. And when the transition with the office and the people that sponsored that bill, it wasn't completely thought out as far as who's going to go enforce that, how are we going to find out who they are, what are our responsibilities, what is the staff, what's that going to cost us. So we removed that from the language of the bill, the civil penalty, as far as, I think that's correct, where we don't charge a penalty if they don't register. There are late fees, but there's not a civil penalty or a criminal penalty for not registering an aircraft at this point.
Okay, we probably couldn't get away with that with our cars. I'm wondering why. Is that not an issue with aircraft? In other words, if you don't register your car and don't have tags, then and it shows up somewhere, then there's a consequence to it. If you're landing in Bend or in Medford or in Portland and you say this is tail number N6295 and that's an unregistered aircraft, I mean there's ways that it could be determined. I'm just wondering why are there no consequences for failing to register an aircraft?
May I continue?
Yes, General.
Mr. Chair, the approach that the answer that I've learned to that question is, hypothetically, let's say we pass a bill to where there is a civil penalty. And then the question comes up, who is going to enforce that? You know, we are already limited with police enforcement officials already. Who are we going to put in charge of being at the airport to look at that aircraft, to see if it is actually registered, to go monitor that and police that? And the financial impacts of going and paying for those kind of services would be more expensive than we're willing to pay at the current time. I think that if we looked at that, if memory serves, there was some kind of $500,000 or $300,000we would have gotten in a biennium if we would have found all of the aircraft that aren't registered. Let me back up. The FAA maintains a record of all aircraft ever registered. But once you have an airplane, if it's wrecked or if it's no longer flyable, well, it's still in the database. It's never purged. So there's a number out there that says that there are this number of aircraft in the state of Oregon. They may be flyable, they may not be flyable. We don't know the answer to that. And the difference from the aircraft that we currently have registered and that number, my numbers are probably wrong here, but I'll say 300.
3,000.
I think 3,000 is the number.
3,000 aircraft that aren't registered, which gives us $186,000 in a biennium. And then, but if you look at those numbers, that would mean, excuse me, doing my math for me, how many people go out and how many do we have to find a month?
15.
So somehow we have to find 15 aircraft a month. So who's going to go to all the 100 airports in the state to find those 15 aircraft a month to recap those revenues? So that's the challenge that we've had.
Of course, you're in this box of enforcement by having registration officers out looking for it. The truth is every aircraft has to refuel. If you land in a commercial place and you want to tie down, I mean, there are other ways. You have to call in before you land. I mean, there are multiple times when, if we wanted to, we could say you can't refuel if you're not registered, or you can't tie down or be in a facility for more than an hour or overnight. I mean, I'm just saying that, and that's just in 10 seconds of thinking about this. So there may be other ways that if it was important to know which aircraft were registered, should be registered in Oregon, that they should be registered, and that there are ways that we could do that. I think it's going to come up as security becomes more and more an issue because of the danger or the volatility or potential for terrorist activity that a small aircraft, you know, could be used for. And so I'm surprised that the federal government hasn't said, we'd like to know, or at least be assured that Oregon knows what aircrafts they've got and who they're registered to, whom they're registered. So I'm just bringing this up. Not only that's $187,000.
May I follow up with one more feedback? It is an important element that we want to take on. However, when it was floated this past session with the transition of directors and the limited staff and the knowledge of how it was actually generated, we weren't prepared to come to this panel or the House or the Senate, and we didn't have all our answers when we needed to have our answers in order to present it appropriately. So it is something that we should take on in the future, in my opinion, and when we have more time to get it lined out more appropriately.
Is that something that you could report on in 2 years when you come back? We'd like to record that as being an issue that needs to be considered and is an assuring registration of aircraft in Oregon.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
I'd like to comment on that because, you know, I wish that you'd think of a simpler way to do it rather than trying to go out and check an aircraft to see if it's registered in Oregon. If there can be a database that you already have of planes that are registered in Oregon, you know, sometimes you can just spot check
but people never know when they're going to be checked. So I don't think that you will have the manpower to take on the kind of thing, but yet there is a security issue there. And so there's probably a way at point of sale, that would be one. There's another way of tracking, I presume, if it's no longer usable at all. In other words, it's in a crash and not viable. That there should be an elimination of that from the data bank. And then I think the spot checking of planes would be easier, well, at least to start off, than trying to do it all. It's a little bit easier with automobiles, because you can't buy, the burden really is on the dealer. You can't buy a car in Oregon and then go register it and then go live in California without paying tax. They're not going to let you do that. So, but I do think that there is a way, and I share the chairman's concern. We had a ship to come into Coos Bay Harbor and parked right there at the dock where we, all the runners and the children stroll on the boardwalk. And they said it was a private vessel, and no one knew it was coming. The Coast Guard didn't catch it as it came in. It was flying a Venezuelan flag. The couple said they had purchased it, bringing it in for repairs. They actually got it into the repair dock, but then they fled and never did pay for the repairs. So I'm not up to date on what happened to it after that. My point is that small airports and small ports many times make it much easier to come in to do bad things. And you can move around in Oregon by airports and by water a lot easier than you can going into PDX. And so that would be my concern, is that we could be faced with something like that. So a simple thing and a first step might be easier than trying to take on the whole thing at one time.
Thank you.
That's it.
Okay. Why don't we continue forward?
Okay. Where were we? Information technology. We don't want. Okay. Okay. For affirmative action, we just submitted our affirmative action plan for the next biennium, and that's just been approved last week. Going on to page 17 for revenues.
Can we go back to affirmative action?
Oops. Okay.
Can you share with me what that plan is?
I don't have the plan with me. If you
just some of the details of what's entailed in that?
Well, we're encouraging for our department the hiring of minorities, women, handicapped people, anybody that under affirmative action, we're trying our best to, as we have vacancies, to hire people that the affirmative action rules ask us to hire. We're trying to do that. We're trying to be proactive and do that. Okay. We're encouraging minorities and handicapped people to apply for our positions as they're vacant.
I just want to share with you, you're brand new, and I've served on this budget committee for three terms now, and just kind of a heads up, that's something that I know is very important to this committee. And so, you know, as you proceed forward over the coming biennium, I'd make sure we're cognizant of the role that affirmative action, and I don't like that term. I like the term opportunity for all Oregonians.
Well, I think it's important also.
Okay. So let's just, in 2 years, let's make sure we can both check back with each other and feel good that all Oregonians have had an opportunity to get an equal shot at working for the Department of Aviation.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank
you. For revenues, I'd like to have Jennifer explain this, since you're the expert.
Representative Smith, there's four major components the revenues derived in the agency budget.
Really quick, can you state your name for the
record? Oh, I'm sorry, Jennifer Keller.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mm-hmm.
One being fuel taxes, and that money is transferred each biennium from the Oregon Department of Transportation, those being avgas and jet fuel
taxes. The other component, licenses and fees, those, as we've kind of referenced before, pilot and, aircraft registration fees, lease fees, things of that nature, miscellaneous other revenue, and then federal funds, which basically constitutes most of our GA entitlement and pavement maintenance and those types of programs. I'm not sure how much detail, because I know Christina will be going into quite a bit of detail. So, okay.
That's enough for now?
Yeah, for now.
Okay, let's do expenditures.
The main programs on the expenditure side of the aviation budget really are operations, search and rescue, GA entitlement, capital improvement, and capital construction. The preponderance of funds for the operation program is other funds generated. Search and rescue is dedicated funds, and those are off of the pilot registration fees. The GA entitlement program is predominantly, and that was restructured this year, that those are federal fund generated monies. We have no budget for capital improvement and capital construction in this recommended budget.
Okay. We'd like to get into our policy packages, page 20. First one you asked before, this is our general aviation entitlement. The revenue from this is federal, state, and local funds for developing the smaller airports in our state. And this year it's going to be just over $3.5 million is what we estimate the amount of money is that we'll be receiving for general aviation entitlement funds. Policy package 104, I have some handouts.
Really quick, on 102, on the $3.5 million, share with me your process for distributing those dollars out to the 29 eligible airports. Is there a project list, or is there an RFP process? How does that work?
Well, the airports have master plans, and the FAA has. Before you can get federal dollars for any airport, you have to have that project in the master plan that's approved by the FAA, and then they prioritize that. And we, based on the need, for example, the Aurora runway I talked to you about is one that will be going on this year. That's very critical, or the airport can't stay in operation in the next couple of years. So it's all prioritized. And then as the FAA determines how much funding is available, we need to have local matching funds, which for our 20 airports have to come from us. And that's all put together to fund the general aviation.
So do you have a list of projects that are going to be funded as a result of the $3.5 million?
Yes, do you have that with you?
Mr. Chair, yes. We do have a list of the airports that that this capital improvement program was generated from. I did not bring that list with me of what those projects are for that are run through the GA entitlement program.
Can you provide the committee with a copy of those?
Certainly.
Certainly.
Terrific.
I have a question on policy package 102.
Okay, Representative Richardson, question on policy package 102.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hidley, I'm in this book, okay, and I'm on tab 2, which is agency summary. I'm on page 44. And it deals with general aviation entitlement program. I'm hoping that you might explain to me or to us how for the 0305 estimates we're showing $6,016,000, and that in the 0507 governor's budget goes down to $486,000, and then we have $9.25 million of new federal funds. So what happened to the other funds? Why is there such a huge change, and just kind of explain what's going on here.
You know,
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, the history behind this is that the Department of Aviation, when it was part of the Department of Transportation, budgeted all of their federal funds as other funds in the way that the Department of Transportation handles their federal funds. During the budget development for this cycle, we determined that it was more appropriate, as these funds are received directly by the Department of Aviation as federal funds, to classify those as federal funds. So that is a technical budgeting adjustment. The funds always were federal. They were just budgeted as other in previous buy-in, and now we're carving those out so they're more clearly identifiable to the committee.
Follow up, please. All right. Looking at that same area, then let's go to all funds. Assuming that they were all federal funds to begin with, why are we going from $6,016,000 in the last buy-in to $9.7 million, a 30% or 35% increase? What generated that kind of an increase?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, that is the policy package, the difference that the policy package provides. There is roughly $6 million in the base budget of federal funds that the agency expects to get in any given biennium. Given the information from the FAA, the agency determined that an additional $3.5 million would be available this biennium, and therefore that is what the policy package represents, is the additional funding that is anticipated to be available.
Okay. Can you follow up? Okay. Please. Would you go further then past the next tab, which is revenue, to page 47, where it gives us the detail of lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds revenue, and it shows total federal fund revenues $10,510,000, and I'm trying to see where the $9,250,000 is in that calculation.
Yeah, there's also the federal funds at 1.26.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, there is more than one program under which the agency receives federal funds. The GA entitlement program is by far and away the largest, but there is a system planning grant funding available through the FAA that is also federal funds, and that is not budgeted for in the GA entitlement budget category. It's budgeted in the operations category.
I'm confused. I think you need to step back, or perhaps, I don't know if Susan.
If you would, struggling with this. If I may, if you would go back to page 44, you will see under the operations summary cross reference breakdown budget program, you'll see under operations it was 7.9. At agency request, and we simply split that out between other funds, which is their registration license fees and motor fuels or fuels revenue, and the 1.26 is that additional federal funding received under the system planning grants. So when you add 1.26 to 9.25, you come down to the 10.5 total federal funds received for the agency. Does that clarify?
Thank you.
Let me ask a follow-up question. Who would make a donation to the Oregon Department of Aviation? Share with me what that is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was going to get into some of this as well. Part of the changes we made for this budget cycle was also a reallocation of the revenue categories that the agency counts their revenues. They do receive donation revenues, but they are relatively minor and had some revenues that were more appropriately classified in different revenue categories, and we have made those changes for the 0507 biennium. I think the agency can better describe what the actual donations are, but they are relatively minor.
What I need help with is the agency request under donations is $1.1 million, and the governor's budget is $15,000.
Right, and that was when, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when we were going through budget development from agency request to governor's recommended budget, I questioned that myself. And what we did is we did a detailed analysis of all the revenue sources for the agency and determined that because of the technical accounting crosswalk between accounting and budget, some of the revenue categories just didn't match up right. And since we were doing the federal fund shift, we decided let's go through and make sure all the revenues are going in the right places. So that's why you see a mismatch between agency request and governor's rec. We didn't make any significant changes in the total revenues, but we did change some of the categories that they landed in.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. Thank you. Why don't we continue?
Okay. On Policy Package 104, we have a couple of handouts for you on that one. And the first thing I wanted to show you was it's from the U.S. Department of Transportation. It's titled Order Soliciting Community Grant Proposals. And what this is a federal program.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, if this packet that he's referring to is at your place, U.S.
Does everybody
United
have
States of America, DOT.
This is a program of grants from the federal government to help improve and maintain air service at smaller airports. And it's been in effect for a couple years. In fact, the Redmond Airport successfully applied for one of these grants when they were going to lose, when they lost air service to Salt Lake City, wasn't it? To Salt Lake City with United when the airline left that market. And they got Delta to come in with substitute service and using the funds from this grant to advertise and help subsidize the cost of the seats. So they kept the service going. It was successful. Load factors are over 76% on an average for that service. And so it helped keep a market open that they would have otherwise lost in air service out of Redmond, as an example. This is being done all over the country. I believe last year there were about 180 applications received by the U.S. Department of Transportation for the grants. As you read through this, it specifies that this is for scheduled airline service only. It's not for air taxis or anything else. It's for scheduled airline service. That's an airline that flies on a schedule, you know, same time every day. Air taxi is more like the yellow cab that you're on State Street and want to go out to Lancaster, you hail a yellow cab. That's a taxi. Air taxi is the same way. It's just when you charter an airplane to go somewhere, that's not what this is. This is just for scheduled air service. If you read the first couple paragraphs on page 2, really sum it up, give you a pretty good idea what the idea is behind this. It's for communities, maybe paragraph 3 is good, where the average airfares are higher than the airfares for all the communities. Improved service will bring benefits to the community, that kind of thing. So they do have a grant process recognizing that over time smaller communities are losing air service. So what we would like to do, as I mentioned earlier, one of my goals is to get all federal dollars we can possibly get into our state. We want to help foster the idea and encourage our airports that would be eligible for this grant to go out and seek them if they can.
Well, I want to interrupt you there really quick. So would individual airports would be eligible to make application as well?
Well, it has to be done that way. We the department, do not make the application. The airport does.
I'd like, at some point, for you folks to come back and talk with us. Because of Senator Berger's leadership, a bill known as Connect Oregon has passed out of the Senate Policy Committee, and pending co-chair and vice-chair authority most likely will be coming to us for consideration, and I'd like to know what opportunities we have as a body to leverage those dollars, should we choose to go that way, to the maximum extent possible. And I'd like you folks to be prepared to come back and talk with us about how you would envision the aviation component of Connect Oregon being leveraged to the maximum extent possible.
Well, maybe this would help a little bit that I did in my past when I was managing airports. The FAA has a budget of federal dollars that they must, when it's allocated by Congress, that they must spend each federal government fiscal year. As you near the end of the year, a lot of grants, for one reason or another, will fall through the cracks, and the airport that received the funds can't spend them. Maybe they didn't have local matching funds. That happens sometimes. In fact, it happened twice in Oregon last year where small airports did not have matching funds and we lost grants. Sometimes there are non-compliance of some requirement the FAA put in the grant. I know San Francisco Airport a couple of years ago lost many, many millions of dollars because they weren't in compliance with some of the noise standards. So I took advantage of that at the airport I was at, and I'd worked with the FAA, and I had projects ready to go because they have to spend the money that fiscal year. So say, hey, I've got a project ready to go. I'd be happy to take the money you're not going to give to San Francisco, and I'll spend it right now. I have the local matching dollars, the project engineered, ready to go.
I'm going to ask you to...
That's what we need to do.
Senator Berger is our policy transportation guru and is also very interested in aviation, particularly an airport down in Coos Bay. And I would request that you folks go work with her and be prepared to come back at some point to share with us how you see Oregon being able to maximize other dollars with any dollars the state may bring forward.
Okay, that's certainly a goal of mine. We'll certainly do that.
Perfect. Thank you.
And this is part of really that plan.
Perfect.
So if you read through this, there's a maximum. If many airports in Oregon applied and were qualified for this, a maximum of 4 any one year could receive the grants in any one state. It could be 4 this year, 4 next year. I believe this year they're going to give $35 million in federal grants to the 50 states. So it could be a maximum of 4 states and 4 airports in Oregon if we were successful in having enough grants, enough applications sent to them. So that's the grant program. And we have been discussing this with our state aviation board, and we gave you a draft of the policy that has been actually adopted by our board now to help encourage us to go forward and foster this. And roughly, to receive one of these grants, roughly 33% of the funds have to be local matching dollars to be able to get the grant, which could be a sizable amount of money. I believe in the case of Redmond, it was $500,000. And Salem Airport's doing it also. They just received a $500,000 grant to try to bring air service into their airport. So roughly a third of that has to be local matching dollars. And what we would like to do is have, in the biennium budget, a $200,000 that we could use for part of the local matching funds if any of the airports receive these grants. The money would only be spent if the Oregon airport was successful in receiving a grant. No money would be spent before they were successful in getting a grant. If they did, then part of the matching funds would come from us to help get the federal dollars in here. The idea is if $100,000 of the money wasn't spent the first year, it would roll over into the second fiscal year. If at the end of that time the total $200,000 was not spent, if we didn't receive enough, state didn't have enough grants, the remaining money would go into the FAM grants for development of Oregon airports. So our first goal would be to maximize the grant funds that we could receive by doing this, and then if money was left, we'd roll over into the FAM grants. So that pretty much is proposal number, package number 104.
Okay.
You want to add something?
Okay.
No, sir.
Okay.
All right. Are there questions on this proposal? Okay, next. Next proposal.
Okay, so we move on to...
Mr. Chairman, let me just say something to Mr. Hitley. Welcome to our community, and all the rustling and bustling is because on the Senate side, we double our committee time, and so people keep calling you out to talk, and the chairman has to meet with the governor, all this kind of stuff, so that's what you're seeing with all of us trying to balance our schedule.
I'm kind of impressed with everybody doing 3 or 4 things at once. Okay. Policy package 106, we have a handout for that also. This is still in draft form, but this is the Youth Aviation Careers Initiative, and this is being presented. I didn't mention this yet, but our State Aeronautics Board, Aviation Board, at the last meeting, okay, we established 2 committees, and one of those committees is a policy committee. I'd like to have Charlie Reardon explain this. I'm supposed to go outside for a second. So here you go.
Mr. Chair, the next item, I think what we have here is 106, Policy Package 106, and it is the Youth Aviation Careers Initiative. And one of the things we think is important with our department is to assist the youths and the high school, everything from the middle school to the high school to the collegiate level, to support aviation education within the state. There are a lot of things in our state that are, we are leaders with I can't think of the word right now, but the light aircraft development in a Bend, using the, I want to say epoxy, but it's not epoxy. I can't think of the type of construction that they have now to build aircraft with Lance Air and Bend, with Vance aircraft up at Aurora. We have a lot of aviation development programs that are we really do lead the nation in quite a few industries. And one of the packages that we have is to assist the high schools, middle schools, or make a program available to where we would offer grants to these educational facilities to foster aviation education within the state. And the details of the Youth Aviation Career Initiative are very similar to the Air Service Initiative. In the biennium, it would be $200,000, and it would be broken down in no more than 10 grants a year. Some challenges that we have with this is, this is just an initiative. We have some work to do on this as far as the performance measures of, let's say we do give a grant for X dollars to a community college to support aviation development. What we need to do to expand this is to have performance measures of was it successful, how many kids went through the program and actually entered into the aviation industry and are and maybe have a well, actually, that's one of the challenges that we have at this point, is to figure out the performance measures of following up, following through. But it is nonetheless an important project that we feel for our state. If the aviation department doesn't promote aviation within the state, I ask you, who will? And not too many other facilities are out supporting this kind of an effort. And that is all I have for the Youth Aviation Careers Initiative, which is Policy Package 106.
That's pretty.
Senator Carter.
I know in my community we have a gentleman. I'm sorry. In my community we have a gentleman who has been working with youth aviation, and they've been very, very successful. Now even have some young people that are flying, and it's very low-income youth from the community, but it's a very rigorous program. And so, how do they contact you with this kind of stuff, or is it an educational institution that you help with?
The initiative here that we have designed is for educational programs for the middle school all the way through the collegiate. So if you had the individual that you're speaking about has a successful program and would like some financial assistance with it, if he's associated with the school already, it would already be perfect. If not, then he would probably have to become associated with the school to attract the children or the people and educate them about, make it known that this opportunity is available.
His program is ongoing, and there are kids from local schools in our community, mm-hmm. and it's about 8 to 10 years old now, and the young people that are engaged in it have assimilators that they work on, and they learn all about science and that kind of stuff. And so I was just wondering, could I just turn him on to you, Charlie, and then you talk to them, or how do you?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter. What Jennifer just asked me is, it is not only educational facilities, not-for-profit organizations that are available as well.
Okay.
I suspect that's what he does.
Yes.
So if you support this and give us the green light to go ahead and do this,
yeah.
Obviously our department would be the people that you talk to.
Okay, thanks.
We have some time available to us on Monday, and I have some questions that would actually involve Mr. Hidley, and so we could adjourn at this point and then
okay.
carry this meeting over until Monday.
Okay.
Would that be all right with you, Senator Verger?
Yeah.
Right. So I think we'd like to do that. One thing I'd like to have him address is the fact that you have 16 employees, is that correct? And you have five managers in that, which is less than you know, if you deduct them out, you've got a 1-to-2 ratio, which is a bit stacked, and so we'd like to have an answer as to why we need to have the additional costs of that many managers for the total staff that you have. And if there's no further questions for today, we'd like to invite you to come back on Monday afternoon, and we will carry forward and continue this open public meeting and possible work group and work session until next week. No objection. We will adjourn.